and Zoe. Zoe, who would live, if only Sagan could find her, and she would. No, Jared thought. No regrets. Not one. Not for anything. Jared heard the soft tap as the open initiated the transfer sequence. He held on to himself as long as he could. Then he let go. Zoe screamed when there was a big roar that shook her room so hard she fell right off her bed and her TV came off the wall. Nanny came over to see if she was okay, but Zoe pushed it away. She didn't want Nanny, she wanted Daddy. And sure enough, in just a minute he came through the door, sweeping her up in his arms and reassuring her and telling her that everything was going to be all right. Then he set her down and said to her that in just a few minutes Mr. Jared would be coming for her, and she had to do what Mr. Jared said, but for now to stay in her room and with Nanny, because she would be safe there. Zoe cried again for a minute and told Daddy that she didn't want him to leave, and he said that he would never leave her again. It didn't make sense because Mr. Jared was coming to get her in just a minute to take her away, but it made her feel better anyway. Then Daddy spoke to Nanny and left. Nanny went into the living room and came back holding one of those guns the Oban used. This was weird because as far as Zoe knew, Nanny never used a weapon before. There were no more explosions, but every once in a while Zoe could hear gunfire going pop, pop, pop somewhere outside. Zoe got back on her bed, clutched Celeste, and waited for Mr. Jared. Nanny gave out a shriek and raised the weapon at something Zoe couldn't see and then ran out from the doorway. Zoe screamed and hid under the bed, crying, remembering what it was like at Cubble, and wondering if those chicken things were going to come get her again like they did there. She heard some thumping in the next room, and then a scream. Zoe covered her ears and closed her eyes. When she opened them again, there were a pair of feet in the room, coming over to the bed. Zoe put a hand over her mouth to be quiet, but couldn't help a whimper or two. Then the feet became knees and hands and arms, and then a sideways head appeared and said something. Zoe squealed and tried to back out from underneath the bed, clutching Celeste, but as soon as she popped out, the woman grabbed her and held her. Zoe kicked and screamed, and it was only after a while that Zoe realized that the woman was saying her name over and over again. "It's all right, Zoe," the woman was saying. "It's all right. Shh, shh, it's all right." Zoe eventually stopped trying to get away and turned her head around. "Where's my daddy?" she said. "Where's Mr. Jared?" "They're both really busy right now," the woman said, still holding Zoe. "They told me to come get you and make sure you were all right. I'm Miss Jane."
"Daddy said I had to wait here until Mr. Jared came to get me," Zoe said.
"I know he did," Miss Jane said.
"But right now, they both have things they have to do. There's a lot going on right now, and it's keeping both of them from coming to find you. That's why they sent me, to keep you safe."
"Nanny keeps me safe," Zoe said.
"Nanny was called away," Miss Jane said. "It's really busy here right now."
"I heard something really loud," Zoe offered.
"Well, that's one of the things keeping everybody busy," Miss Jane said.
"Okay,"
Zoe said, doubtfully.
"Now, Zoe," Miss Jane said, "what I want you to do is put your arms around my shoulders and your legs around my waist. Hold on to me real tight and keep your eyes closed until I tell you to open them. Can you do that?"
"Uh-huh,"
Zoe said.
"But how will I hold Celeste?"
"Well, let's put her in between you and me right here,"
Miss Jane said, and put Celeste between her tummy and Zoe's.
"She'll get squished," Zoe said.
"I know," Miss Jane said, "but it'll be all right. Are you ready?"
"I'm ready,"
Zoe said. "Then close your eyes and hold on real tight, Miss Jane said. And Zoe did, even though when they walked out of her bedroom, Zoe's eyes hadn't closed yet, and as they came into the living room, Zoe saw what looked like Nanny sleeping on the floor. Then Zoe closed her eyes all the way and waited for Miss Jane to tell her to open them again. The Oban Sagan had encountered in the science building largely avoided her, leading her to believe they were mostly specialized as scientists. But every now and again one of them would try to engage her with a weapon or try attacking her physically. The quarters were too close to wield the awkward Oban rifle with any sort of accuracy. Sagan stuck with the knife and being quick. This approach failed her when the Oban babysitting Zoe nearly took off her head. Sagan threw the knife at the Oban to distract it and then launched herself at it, fighting it out hand to hand. Sagan knew she was lucky that while they were rolling on the floor, the Oban got a leg caught up in the furniture. It gave her just enough time to squirm out of its grip, get on top of it, and strangle the thing to death. With Zoe collected and held in the crook of her arm, it was time to get out. "Harvey," Sagan said.
"Kind of busy right now," Harvey said.
Through her integration, Sagan could see him fighting his way toward a new hovercraft. He crashed his previous one into an airship that was trying to get off the ground and kill him from above. "I've got the target, and I need support and a ride."
5 minutes and you'll have both," Harvey said. "Just don't rush me."
"I'm rushing you," Sagan said, and then stopped the conversation. The hallway in front of Bhutan's apartment led north, past Bhutan's lab, and east into other parts of the building. The lab hallway would connect her quicker to where Harvey could pick them up, but Sagan didn't want to risk Zoe seeing either her father or Jared as they went by. Sagan sighed, went back into the apartment, and retrieved the Oban weapon, felt it balance awkwardly in her grip. It was a two-handed weapon, and the hands were meant to be Oban, not human. Sagan hoped that everyone had abandoned the building or would be busy going after Harvey, and that she wouldn't have to use it. She had to use it 3 times. The 3rd time, using it to batter an Oban when the ammunition ran out. The Oban screamed. So did Zoe, each time Sagan had to use the weapon. But she kept her eyes shut, like she promised. Sagan reached the place where she came into the building, a blown-out window on the 1st floor of a stairwell.
"Where are you?" she said to Harvey.
"Believe it or not, the Oban aren't keen to give me their equipment," Harvey said.
"Stop bugging me. I'll be there soon."
"Are we safe yet?" Zoe asked, her voice muffled from her head being buried in Sagan's neck.
"Not yet," Sagan said.
"Soon, Zoe."
"I want my daddy,"
Zoe said.
"I know, Zoe," Sagan said.
"Shh." From the floors above, Sagan heard movement.
"Come on, Harvey," Sagan thought. "Get moving."
The Oban were really beginning to piss Harvey off. Mowing down a couple of dozen of them in the mess hall had been a uniquely satisfying experience, to be sure. Cathartic, particularly in light of how the Oban bastards killed off most of the 2nd platoon. And ramming the little hovercraft into that airship had held its own special pleasures. But once Harvey was on foot, he began to realize just how many of those damn Oban there were, and how much more difficult it was to manage them when one was hoofing it. And then here was Sagan, integrated again, and that was a good thing, but telling him she needed a ride, as if he weren't busy.
"She's the boss," Harvey said.
Getting one of the parked hovercraft was proving to be difficult. The Oban had them in a yard with only one way in, but there were at least 2 of them out and around, looking for him.
"And look," Harvey thought, as one zoomed into view. "Here comes one now."
Harvey had been crouched down and trying to be inconspicuous, but now he stepped out where he could be seen and waved his hands broadly.
"Hey!"
Harvey yelled.
"Asshole! Come get me, you creepy fuck!"
Whether by hearing him or seeing him move, the Oban operating the hovercraft turned toward Harvey.
"Okay," Harvey thought.
Now what the fuck do I do?
The first order of business, it turned out, was jumping clear of the stream of flechettes that blasted out of the hovercraft's gun. Harvey rolled, came out of the roll prone, and lined up his open weapon to shoot at the now receding Oban. Harvey's first shot wasn't even close. The second took off the back of the Oban's head.
That's why you wear a helmet, jackass, Harvey thought, and went to retrieve his prize and then retrieve Sagan.
Along the way, a number of Oban on foot tried to do to Harvey what he had done to the Oban previously driving the hovercraft. Harvey preferred to run them down rather than shoot them, but he wasn't picky.
Right here, Harvey said to Sagan,
and then was more than a little surprised to see what Sagan was carrying.
That's a kid, he said.
I know that, Sagan said, positioning Zoe securely on the hovercraft. Get to the capture pod as fast as you can. Harvey accelerated to full speed and fled straight. There didn't seem to be any immediate chase.
I thought we were supposed to bring back Boutin, Harvey said.
Change of plans, Sagan said.
Where's Boutin?
Harvey asked.
Dirac's taking care of him, Sagan said.
Dirac?
Harvey said, surprised again.
I figured he was dead.
I'm pretty sure he is, Sagan said.
Then how is he going to take care of Boutin? Harvey said.
I have no idea, Sagan said. I just know he will.
Boutin opened his eyes in a brand new body.
Well, not brand new, he corrected. Gently used.
His Oban assistant opened his creche and helped him out of it. Boutin took a few tentative steps and then a few non-tentative ones. Boutin looked around the lab and was fascinated to see how much more vibrant and engaging it was. It was as if his senses had been at low volume all his life and then were suddenly cranked up to full. Even a science lab looked good. Boutin looked over to his old body, which was brain dead but still breathing. It would die of its own accord in a few hours, or a day at most. Boutin would use this new body's capabilities to record its death and then take the evidence with him to the capture pod, along with his daughter. If the pod's still there, he quickly amended. It was clear that the Special Forces squad they had captured had somehow escaped. One of them might have taken it back.
Well, Boutin thought, that's fine.
He was already spinning an alternative story in his head, one in which he, as Dirac, killed Boutin. The Oban, denied their prize of consciousness, would stop the war and give Dirac permission to leave with Boutin's body and Zoe.
That's not quite believable, Boutin thought. He'd have to work out the details.
Whatever story he thought of, however, Boutin suddenly became aware of a small image flitting across his field of vision. It was a picture of an envelope. "You have a message from Jared Dirac," read a block of text that appeared in the bottom of his field of view. "To open it, say, open."
"Open," Boutin said out loud.
This was curious.
The envelope opened and then faded. Rather than a text message, it was a voice message.
"Hello, Boutin,"
it said in a simulated voice that sounded just like Dirac. Sounded just like him now, actually, Boutin corrected. "I see that you have gone ahead and taken this body. But before I go, I thought I'd just leave you some final thoughts. A wise creature once told me that it was important to make choices," the voice continued. "Through much of my short life, I made no choices at all, or at least no choices of consequence. But now, at the end of my life, I am faced with a choice. I can't choose whether to live or die. You've made that choice for me. But when you told me that I had no choice but to help you with your plans, you made a mistake. I do have a choice, and I've made it. My choice is not to help you. I can't judge whether the Colonial Union is the best government for humanity. I didn't have the time to learn everything I should have learned about it. but I choose not to risk the deaths of millions or even billions by helping you engineer its overthrow. It may be that this will ultimately be the wrong decision to have made, but it is my decision, the one I think that best allows me to do what I was born to do, to keep humanity safe.